What's up, everybody? You're listening to NBA Therapy. This is episode 20. What episode are we having now? 21. My name is Nate Thotzor. I'm here with my co-host, Vinny. Listen, let's just get right into it. The playoffs have begun. So much has been going on. It's been pretty crazy. So many battles. We're going to talk about the East today. We're going to talk about the West tomorrow. How those games have been going so far. Vinny, how are you feeling right now about the playoffs?
Right now, I feel really good. Can't lie, last night was kind of stressful to start. And then the way the game ended, I feel real good. Let's do Nets Celtics at the end. You want to go through everything else first in the East?
All right, sure. We could probably do 2 hours on Nets Celtics. If anybody's new here, I'm a diehard Nets fan. Vinny's diehard Celtics fan. Vinny was – you were at – I believe he was at the 08 championship parade. And he was what? Vinny, how old were you? 6 years old when that happened?
Six years old, yeah.
How was that experience, by the way, being at the parade?
Honestly, back then, like, I was 6 years old.
But Do you remember it?
I remember a little bit of it because I remember they used to let fans take pictures with the trophies. So I have pictures of the 2007 World Series with my dad holding me up and the 2008 championship.
Oh my gosh.
The 2007 baseball, 2008 NBA championship. Oh, it was like, I kind of remember both of them together. Like, it's like a clubbed memory, but like, it's just such good memory. It's one of the best memories I have.
That's crazy. That's incredible. See, I'm so jealous. And where this series has been going, I'm also very jealous of you that your team's actually winning it. It's probably been the most electric series.
Let's be honest. Like, the way the Celtics-Brooklyn series is the level of an Eastern Conference Finals. Like, it's so unfair that we're seeing this in round one.
All right, yeah. We'll get to it later. Let's just start with Heat-Hawks.
All right, let's start there.
So going into that matchup, I actually thought that – I was like, you know what? Heat Hawks, probably not much to talk about. But I figured that – I thought that – I don't know. I thought it'd be more fun. I thought the games would be – not the series and fun, but I thought the games would be a little closer. Miami wasn't exactly like blowing out teams all season. And they didn't really blow out the Hawks in game two, but – there's just never been a point in any of these games where I felt like the Heat weren't in complete control. And to be honest with you, I think the series could be a sweep.
I think the series could catch up. The thing that's kind of crazy is, I guess, I didn't expect Bam to be shutting down Trey as well as he has. Like, Bam is like the Trey stopper right now.
Oh my gosh, it's crazy.
In game one, Trey had like, I don't know, 8 points. Like, it was so...
He shot 1 for 12. He shot 1 for 12 in game one. And Bam then... had a good... Had a great job in that. When you have a defender like Bam that can switch out in the perimeter like that, like you said, I mean, go to a guy like Trey. Trey's like 6'2". Bam's like, what, 6'10"?
Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy.
And then game two was just a Jimmy Butler show. I mean, like 43 points. Like, he was just dominant.
Yeah, it's funny because I feel like during the regular season, I think that out of all the star players, so if you want to, like, the top 15, top 20, you know, whatever players you want to put there, Jimmy's, like, in that range. Some would probably say
he's
with that top 12 range. But in the top 20 realm, I feel like he always has one of the quietest regular seasons. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like you're never, like, waking up the next morning, it's like, oh my gosh, Jimmy had 45 against the Grizzlies in a thriller. I don't know. Is it just me? Like, I feel like I like almost forget that he's in the league sometimes.
I would say of the 20 best players in the league, I personally have him in like the 15-20 range. Yeah. I would say in that range of the top 20, he's probably the least talked about star in the league. Like, his regular seasons go so under the radar. Like, even this year for the Heat, people who talk about Bam's defense and like Kyle Lowry's impact once he came and like Eric Spoelstra's coaching, like Jimmy gets as much credit as he should. And like, we were talking about Tyler Hero coming off the bench, six men of the year. You just never hear about Jimmy. And then the playoffs come around, and then usually in the playoffs you hear a lot about Jimmy. I remember we had the Celtics series, I think it was 2017, when him and Rondo and Dwayne Wade were slicing us up. They went 2-0, then Rondo got hurt, and we beat them 4 straight, 4-2.
Yes, Celtics Bulls. That's when they went up 2-0.
Then Rondo got hurt, and then he put his leg out when somebody was running by him, and he got fined, suspended, and all that stuff.
That was crazy.
So and then obviously the bubble, Jimmy was insane. Like, he just went Superman mode.
That was the best moment of his career, was the bubble.
Yeah, 100%. I think There is, I think it's going to be like a quiet sweep. Like everybody's kind of expecting it. Nobody's kind of talking about it, but I think Miami Heat have kind of done their job.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, I mean, just like I feel like every time I looked up in that game, Jimmy was getting a dunk, and he was like flexing on the crowd. He like they get so many open dunks against Atlanta. Atlanta's defense is just they make so many mistakes, and Bogdanović had that late game heat check where he. It looked like he couldn't miss for a time, and he thought maybe he can get back into it. But I mean, Jimmy was just incredible at that. And this is in Miami. We all know Miami's defense is great. We've all talked about that. But when they when they're hitting their shots like that, and they're gonna play all the defense they do, they're honestly tough to beat as maybe any team in the league. And I know me and you, I feel like we kind of dismissed them a little bit in our predictions, but. I mean, they're handling business. Not that the Hawks are some great team. They're probably one of the worst teams in the playoffs, but I feel like what the Heat's doing is so impressive.
Yeah. Whenever a team kind of does what they do, like you can never knock them. Even if you expected it, you still have to get the job done. Yeah. So I think Miami's doing what they have to do. They just have to wait for whether they see Toronto and Philly.
And one thing that I think is very important with how Jimmy plays is that last night or the Heat-Hawks game, he went 11 for 12 from free throw, which is incredible. He gets to the line. He's a great defender. His three-point shooting has just completely gone off the deep end in the last few years. He can't shoot at all. He's weirdly making threes this postseason. Shot 4 for 7 in that 45-point performance he had. And you're not gonna get that at him all the time. But he's kind of a player that's built for like half-court offense in the playoffs. He's a great defender in it. He gets most of his shots there anyway. He's great with his mid-range. His fall-away jumper, he's always hitting that. I don't know. It seems like the playoffs favor his style, and he's not really like a three-point shooter. And you'd think the playoffs – I mean, everything's about three-point shooting in the league now, but Jimmy's been able to do it. And I got to say, I love watching him. I love his energy. The fact that his story of the NBA is just incredible, how – he was an orphan earlier on. And like that guy fought for every single thing he got. And I truly respect Jimmy. I love what the Heat are doing. I don't know. I still am dubious of picking them to make a finals run or something. I'm sure you are too.
Yeah, I don't see them coming out of the East at all.
They could, though. They definitely could.
I think it's more likely that Philly beats them than they come out of the East.
You think it's more likely Philly beats them?
Than the Heat coming out of the East, yeah.
Really? I mean,
I think the Heat will be the Sixers in the series, but I think if you told me whether I had to bet whether the Heat would come out of the East or Philly beats Miami, I think Philly beats Miami.
Okay. That makes sense. By the way, Bam Adebayo, horrible in that game too. He was amazing in game one, he was horrible in game two.
Yeah, he had a tough game, off day for him.
But the Heat are winning.
Yeah, they are.
And like we said, I think the series could be a sweep. One really quick thing about the Heat, I think it's interesting that they now have Duncan Robinson coming off the bench and Max Strus is starting. And I know Strus has started he started in some regular season games, but it's just really weird to me that I just feel like Duncan Robinson was perfect for that team. You know, he brought shooting to a team that wasn't exactly full of shooters, especially their starting lineup. When you have Jimmy and Bam out there, I thought Duncan was great for the spacing. Not that Strus can't shoot it, but I mean, Duncan is literally out there to run around and shoot to open up spacing. But I mean, it's working. So what do I know? The Dwayne Dedmon minutes, I don't understand. I thought Omar Yurtseven was better than him. And Omar Yurtseven had a nice little stretch of games when they were so injured. As soon as they got healthy, he was immediately shoveled to the back of the bench. But don't even know what's going on there. But yeah, some of the things I don't understand what they do. But hey, it's Eric Spoelstra. So, like I said, there's so many guys, we didn't even talk about Eric Spoelstra for Coach of the Year, but he could have been voted too.
Yeah, he could have. I think it's the harm of like sometimes when you're expected to be really good, you don't actually get the votes for Coach of the Year. Like, because I think Kyle Lowry came, people expected them to have like the best rotation in the East and be a really good regular season team. So I think that kind of hurt him.
First seed, though, give up to the Heat.
Yeah, but I think you if you use the same argument, like Monty Williams won 64 games, so then you could just like anything you could say about Eric Spoelstra, you can say about Monty Williams, and he won more. Yeah. And they're like one of the most dominant road teams. Yeah. So I just think he's up there, but I don't think he wins.
All right. Okay, let's talk about Philly Toronto, which is
It's over.
Here's the thing about that series, and it bothered me so much watching it because, you know, I still have the James Harden thing didn't exactly go great in Brooklyn. I don't want to say I'm rooting against him for it, but I'm not exactly his biggest fan. I felt betrayed when he left the Nets or when he quietly forced his trade out. I didn't even believe it till I literally found out that he left. And I was very dismissive about him in our playoff predictions. And to be honest with you, I still am. I know they're winning. I know the 76ers are doing great. But here's the thing. And it was especially apparent in this series. I guess I didn't expect. I really thought Toronto was going to win that game that went to overtime last night. Didn't happen. I think the thing I expected was I figured Toronto would put more of a fight. But it's gotten to a point where Harden, he doesn't even have to be Harden. He just has to be passable for them to win against this team. Because if you have Maxey going off for, he had what, 38 in game one? I believe Tyrese, right? Didn't Maxey have like 38 in game one? Tyrese Maxey went off in game one. Tobias Harris shot really efficiently. I think they combined for like 60, Tobias and Maxey. And of course, Embiid's been doing his thing all series. Hit that incredible step back last night to pretty much seal the game. I think that when you have performances like that from Maxey and most notably Tobias Harris, who isn't the most reliable guy in the playoffs, a little up and down, that Harden just needs to be passable. And I think that in a game, like for example, when you're in a game with the Celtics, right? Let's say they're in a game two against the Celtics and you have that Celtics crowd going crazy like they were and they're bringing the atmosphere that they've had in this Nets series. And, you know, I get the Nets series a little different with Kyrie. We're going to get into Kyrie. But I feel like in a game like that, and this sounds really dismissive, but Harden just isn't a guy to me that rises to the occasion. And I think that's going to bite this team in the ass later on.
I mean that's what been kind of the story of Harden's career, right? Like, even in Houston, when he would have pretty good games, like, obviously, I don't think he's ever performed in the playoffs he did at the regular season James Harden level. He would need his teammates to play better than they were to kind of win them games. So, like, if Tyrese Maxey is dropping, like, 25 and, like, 38 in game one, like, Harden doesn't need to be good. Like, I don't hear anybody talking about how average James Harden has been the first three games. I mean, it's honestly like he's not a superstar and he's not playing like a superstar. I don't know whether his confidence was kind of damaged on the Nets and then he's never recovered, or he's not in shape. He just doesn't feel like James Harden. Like, when I think of the Sixers, I don't get scared. Like, oh my God, it's the duo of Embiid and Harden. Like, people are talking like it's Kobe and Shaq. Like, I don't feel that anymore. Like, I just think he seems involved in the team and he seems like he's been a good teammate, but I just don't think on the court he's been that good. But really quickly, I have this, what Doc Rivers did last night just pissed me off so much. So is the last
in your rant, because I mean, you know, really quickly, I know you guys won your championship with Doc Rivers, but Vinny isn't Doc Rivers' biggest fan.
No, like, he does things in playoff series that just annoy me so much. So tip, classic Doc Rivers move. So last possession of the fourth quarter before overtime in regulation.
Yeah.
You have Embiid dribbling outside the three-point line, like 30 feet away from the three-point line. No screens, no actions, just four guys flat out standing outside, no movement. And you have Embiid taking a fall fadeaway, falling to the left three from the elbow. Like, it makes no sense to me. Like, that's a terrible shot. Like, Embiid is one of the best post players, if not the best post player in the game right now. And he can pass out of the post. Why do you not have him at the low block or even the high block? Make him shoot like a long two. Like, that's a way better shot than a fall away three for Embiid. Yeah. Like, yes, I know he can shoot sometimes. But in the crunch moments, if that's how the Sixers choose to play, I don't think they beat the Heat. Like, you need systematic plays getting Embiid good looks from the low block. Like, yep. It just makes that play, like, really annoyed me. And then obviously hit that extremely tough shot in overtime, and that was kind of similar to the shot he missed in regulation, but that's different because it's like 0.9 seconds on the shot clock. But yeah, when you have 5 seconds ticking down, Doc Rivers doesn't make good winning decisions. Like, the only time, and anytime anybody ever says 2008 Celtics, like, look what he did, we were stacked. Kevin Garnett was in the best, probably defensive form of his life. Paul Pierce was the truth. We had Ray Allen. Rondo was coming into understanding his game better and coming into becoming Rondo and who he was. And then after 2008, he never really coached us and, like, was able to get over the fact that KG and Paul Pierce were getting old. He never took us to another finals after 2010. Like, 11, 12, 13 were disappointments. And then obviously we traded them to the Nets.
Yep.
And then he went to the Clippers. What did he do there? He had amazing teams. He had one of
the... He blew that 3-1 lead to Houston in 2015.
He blew a 3-1 lead in 2003. I think it was Orlando Magic. I forget who they played, but they the T-Mac. T-Mac's Magic blew a 3-1 lead.
He's blown more than one 3-1 lead.
He's blown 2 3-1 leads, I believe. Yeah,
the bubble one against the Nuggets.
Oh, he's blown three. He's blown 3 3-1 leads.
Yeah, he's blown three.
And then the NBA goes and puts him in the top 8 best NBA coaches of all time. Like, give me a break. Like, Doc Rivers is so
not deserved.
I don't think so. Like, he's always had stacked teams. Like, outside of the Magic, the Celtics are stacked. The Clippers are stacked. Sixers are not stacked, but he has Daryl Morey as his GM now, who's willing to make big threes. And then he has James Harden and Joel Embiid. He's always had at least 2 superstars every place he's gone, every team, since 2008.
Really quickly on James Harden, he is their 4th leading scorer right now, just across the series, averaging like 18 and 10 for the series, shooting 41 from the field, about like 7 free throws a game. I mean, the free throws this team also takes really annoys me. I mean, I just don't like watching it. Embiid's at like 11 free throws a game this series. Every time I look at him, I feel like Embiid is shooting free throws. I think he had 12 in the first quarter of game 2. It's kind of ridiculous. And Maxi and Tobias Harris are combined averaging, I think, 55 a game for this series. No, sorry, 45. Excuse me. They're averaging 45 combined for this series. And when you have those performances from your third and fourth best player, you're not going to lose in the first round if you have a guy like Embiid or James Harden.
Yeah, I mean, Maxi has just been unbelievable, right? You have to give him his props. Like, he stepped up big time. Obviously, he improved a lot during the regular season from last year, and then he just continued in the same stride. Max has been so good, especially that game 1. Unbelievable. Lights out. That was amazing.
It really hurts watching this, bro, because I really want him to trade.
Yeah, and you were rooting for the downfall.
I said it every time when I was here with the trade rumors. I was like, okay, if we give up Harden, obviously Simmons would be in the deal, but like, that's the only young asset we're going to get back. And I love Seth Curry and Andre Drummond. I really like how they play, but Drummond we only have for the rest of this year. Seth Curry, I think we have for next year, and his contract's up. I was really hoping to get a younger player like Thibault or Maxey, who I really want. I mean, I love Thibault, but I mean, Maxey's the man.
Because
he's been incredible. He's so fun to watch. He's the only guy I like watching on this series.
I mean, if you guys get Thibault, you become the best team in the league. So, like, they would never give you that.
I mean, I thought it'd be fair if we got to throw in Thibault.
Yeah, I would not. I would not like to be playing if Thibault or Maxey were on the Nets. Let me just say that would not like that.
Yeah, yeah, after Harden, like, their scoring leaders, it really drops off on Philly. And again, I appreciate they're doing. I still think that the Heat are gonna beat them. And again, I picked them in 7. I didn't think they'd be up this much. I think that the opening odds of this series were really even. Philly was a really small favorite, and Toronto was a small underdog. I think this is one of the more evenly matched series we thought going into the first round. But, yeah, I mean, it's over. Philly's up 3-0.
I think
the Scottie Barnes injury is just crucial in game 1. I thought he was playing great before he got hurt. He almost had a triple-double in that game. Had, like, I think it was, like, 2 assists short. I thought Scottie was playing great, and then just run on cue, gets injured, and then it kind of all went to trash.
Game 3 was a game to win, right? If you want to make this a series, you have to win game 3.
And they got up really big in that first quarter. They're up 20 at one point.
I think another problem the Raptors have had is that Fred VanVleet has been so inconsistent. Like, there are stretches when he looks really good and he looks like the regular season.
Yeah,
Fred VanVleet, and then there's stretches where he just struggles. He just struggles so much.
And even Siakam, you see a little dip from his regular season numbers.
Yeah.
It hasn't been the most decisive. Also, really quickly, that game two, what was that whole deal with Nick Nurse and Embiid? Did you see that?
Yeah, they're arguing about a foul call that
Embiid was that?
I have no idea. I think just in the playoffs, like, things get heated, and then they were just kind of arguing.
I don't know if it's true, but that, I don't know, it seemed pretty bad what they were saying. Like, Embiid was like, stop, like, bitching or something like that. I can't remember.
Yeah. Did he say they're that? They were arguing because I think that was the game, like, Embiid was getting a bunch of free throws, so. But like Nick Nurse was like kind of complaining, like, oh, you're just giving him all the ticky tacky calls. And then Embiid was like, stop bitching or whatever.
Yeah. Man, I wanted Maxi so bad, bro. So bad. But yeah, I mean, both those series are, it's probably safe to say that the Heat and the 76ers are moving on.
Yeah.
I mean, they both could be sweeps, to be honest with you. I mean, maybe, hopefully Toronto will fight back and do something. It's just, man, I'm disappointed in Toronto. I thought they'd be better. I really did, but I don't know. Philly's put up against a good run here.
It's over, ladies and gentlemen. It's over.
Yeah, literally. Poor Scottie Barnes, man. I'm so mad about that. I feel like if he was healthy, maybe this would be a different game, but
I think Scottie Barnes wins them what? One game, two games? Like, I don't think that's like a swinging injury. Yeah. I don't think that, but I still think that Philadelphia was playing deep enough that they would have come out.
Yeah. And if this Tobias and Maxi thing lasts, I mean, it's scary. And like what I said with Miami, when Miami's hitting their threes like that, how they were, especially in game one when they shot that ridiculous percentage, they're like, I think they could get out of the East. If Philly is going to get these if they're going to get Maxi and Tobias to contribute the way they've been contributing, then I think they could make it out of the East. Like, it's, there's so much parity in the NBA, I feel like. There's no clear-cut winner. There's none. There's no clear-cut favorite.
Celtics.
Okay, clear-cut.
we'll get into it, but yeah, I think so.
That's all I got on this series, though.
Yeah. Well, I think we can move on to Milwaukee-Chicago, which last night,
it's a weird
out
one.
Of the blue. Yeah, it's a weird one.
So, now, this series has been interesting because both these games have been close, and in game one, I mean, right on cue, DeRozan had like the 6-for-24 game, whatever he shot in game one, that horrible percentage. What did he shoot in that game? He shot 6-for-24, right?
6-for-25? Yeah, 6-for-24. Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
I mean, if you want to talk about playoff failures, like, DeRozan is no stranger to that. Some fair, some not stranger.
That's brutal. Against LeBron. That's brutal.
But, I mean, here's the thing. He played really badly, and they only lost that game by like 7. And then flash forward to this game, game last night that they actually pulled out. DeRozan had that huge layup at the end to seal it. DeRozan was unbelievable. And I was like, okay, there he is. And great, I didn't think DeRozan was going to fold this year. I mean, he was incredible all regular season. I didn't think it'd be like one of those things where he just shoots like 1-for-12 and it plays horribly. And he did his thing last night. So my question to you, Vinny, could the Bulls win this series?
Oh, it's so tough. I think with Chris Middleton being injured, I don't think a timetable's out yet for when he's back. Have they said anything yet? I don't think so, right?
22 minutes ago, Yahoo Sports, Bucks and Middleton to miss rest of first round NBA playoff series.
Yeah, so if he's out for the rest of the series,
at least 2 weeks I'm seeing with this knee injury or this MCL strain he's got.
The first two games were close, like you said. And then game two was one of those, like, Reggie Miller-esque, where like one player just like wills his team to win. Like, that was
so happy team, like,
yeah, he just unbelievable. He just carried that team to win. And let's give Alex Caruso his credit. He was pretty good last night.
Caruso was everywhere on the floor, man. Yeah, I mean, he was like good last night. One of those players, we took the box score, and it seems like he doesn't really do much. I mean, he had 10 assists in that game, but Caruso was one of those guys, and I said this as soon as the Lakers let go of him and they decided to pay other guards, or another guard, I should say. A guy Caruso can fit on most teams. He's going to play defense. He's going to do all the dirty work. He'll never have the ball in his hands. I mean, he's not the best shooter, but he can hit him if he needs to. He can spot up. like I said, never needs the ball in his hand. Great for the locker room. Who doesn't love Caruso? He's going to sell a lot of jerseys because he has his whole cult fan base. Like, I mean, teams should be lining up to get Caruso.
Yeah, I mean,
not an expensive contract.
Is like, if you think about it, like, what bad management from the Lakers? He's like the perfect. The Lakers would kill for Caruso right now. He plays hard defense, extremely good guard defender, plays strong, and just effort. And then he can shoot a three a little bit, and then he passes well.
He started in game six of the NBA Finals in 2020.
Yeah.
And was awesome. But that's just how it is. Yeah. The Middleton thing is interesting because he hasn't really gotten going this series. But
this
injury matters a lot.
I think people kind of are underestimating how much it matters, because if you watch like the finals and any close game the Bucks have played over the last couple of years, it was Middleton running the show. Like, the Middleton Giannis pick and roll, and then Middleton takes the shots off the right elbow. He hits a mid-range jumper consistently. Like, that's the go-to offense in the clutch for the Bucks. So it's going to be very interesting to see how they make up for that and whether they run some sets for Giannis or they have Drew Holiday running the show now in the clutch.
And I can't remember. They're going to need a forward or a big man to replace Middleton, the star. I mean, maybe they could probably afford to go smaller, but... Were there any other injuries to the Bucks last night other than Middleton?
Bobby Portis couldn't finish the game because he got hit in the eye and he was bleeding from the eye.
Yeah, that's right. Because, I mean, Milwaukee's bench gave them nothing last night. I think Milwaukee's bench had 8 points. Milwaukee's bench had 8 points last night. So they were just giving them nothing. And Milwaukee, I feel like, is normally seen as a deep team. But if their bench isn't going to give them that, and now Middleton's out, that's not a great sign. And the Bulls, they don't have Lonzo. They're probably not going to get him. Yeah, they're not going to get Lonzo. He's done. But I still think they have a good team. Patrick Williams, I mean, he's not the most flashiest player, but he can play. And now you can have him guard someone else than Middleton. Maybe he'll split the Giannis assignment. Because Giannis is just going to – he's going to have to go to – I mean – he's not going to have to go to like a historic level, but he's going to have to do Giannis things for them to get out of the first round. And that's just not something I thought when I first heard of this series. I was like, oh, they'll get out of there easy. But now with this Middleton injury and with DeRozan, I mean, he just destroyed them last game. I thought that I kind of just penciled in Holiday, Middleton, Wes Matthews, all their great defenders that they could hold their guards. But it's not exactly happening. And this game three becomes really interesting. It's also in Chicago. And, like, the Bulls did their job. They split the first two games in Milwaukee. Now they're going back to Chicago. Those fans are going to be going crazy. I can't wait to see what Chicago, with that city loves basketball. They're a great place to play by all accounts. I think those fans are going to bring it.
Yeah. I think game three is going to be a huge game. I think if Giannis can kind of just pick that out of his hat and kind of get them that win, I think that gives the Bucks a lot of momentum heading into 4, 5, 6, the home stretch of the series. I still think it's hard to bet against Giannis even without Middleton. Like, it just he's just gonna do Giannis things, and I think this is a switch that Giannis always needed to flip, and this is the bridge he always needed to cross. He needs to become the takeover guy in the big moments. In the clutch, you need Giannis and the ball hitting some sort of jumper consistently, so then that opens the driving lane in the clutch. Because usually he still doesn't trust himself enough, or the team doesn't trust himself enough, where he reliably handles the ball in the clutch. It's still like Chris Middleton. It's still
no,
like
you're Middleton right. Show. You're right. Middleton does run the show, and Middleton's been great for them. Like, I feel like he's a very player. When they were first, I remember that first playoff run they had in 2019 when they made the Eastern Conference Finals. And they lost to Toronto. They won the first two games, blew the last four. I saw Stad Middleton scored over 14 points, I think, once in that whole series. Like, he was very inconsistent. He's a completely different player now.
And the fact that Chris Miller runs the show, I think it's not a knock on Giannis necessarily. I think it's a testament to his...
No, it works for the team.
He's a testament to the modern superstar, right? He's not going to be stubborn and just play his game. Like, trust me, there are other superstars in the league, or were superstars, Russell Westbrook, who would not give up the ball in those situations. Like, Giannis understands his role and understands how he can best lead the Bucks to win. And he knows that Chris Middleton is winning basketball. And But now that's no longer the case, right? Giannis has to kind of take over the show. And I think long term for his career, for the next 3-4 years, I think if he's to become even more dominant than he is now, which is scary, I think he needs this next evolution in the playoffs.
Yeah. The Bucks defense, I think the Bucks defense will still look great.
Yeah,
it definitely did in game one. Game one was, it definitely felt like a playoff game. A lot of missed shots.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's been interesting to me that the Bulls haven't been able to hold the Bucks. Like, the Bucks haven't been, like, running them out of the gym. And I kind of thought that there was a chance for that to happen because the Bulls' defense was really bad to close the season. I mean, Caruso brings a lot, but he's not swinging a defense. I mean, pretty much no guard can. Like that, but especially against the offense of the Bucks, but the Bulls are putting up a fight. I love what they've done with this series, and this Middleton injury sucks. Not the only key injury in the playoffs. We'll cover that in the next pod tomorrow, but I don't know. I really didn't expect this. I really didn't expect myself to get excited for this series, but I am.
Yeah, I think without Middleton, I can see it going 6 or 7. Like, I think the Bulls are definitely way more competitive now. And because it just also means one less wing to guard. Like,
yeah.
Caruso can kind of play, kind of opens up one more spot for Caruso to guard.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas otherwise he would have had the Middleton assignment. So I think you can have Caruso and Drew Holiday, and that kind of shuts down some of the Bucks offense. So I think it's going to be a super exciting series. I can't wait to see, like you said, how United Center is going to react to games 3 and 4.
They should be hopefully.
Definitely. Hopefully we get a good series. Yeah, hopefully we get a good series.
DeMar DeRozan, career high, by the way, in that game, that for 1 point performance. Yeah. Some of those shots he hit was just incredible.
He was unbelievable yesterday. He was unbelievable.
Okay, let's get into it. Nets Celtics, probably the most interesting playoff series for people to watch. Probably the most joyful injury. Oh, sorry, not injury. Probably the most joyful series for people to watch, except for Nets fans and myself. I don't even know where to start. So, listen, Vinay, you're up 2-0. This is probably the best the Celtics fan has felt since Celtics fan has felt in probably
2018.
Yeah, probably a while. Years, yeah. So, yeah. You know, I hate that obviously my team is losing, but I'm happy for you as your friend. Just go. Give your whole Celtics spiel. What this series has been, and it really feels like something's happening here with the Boston Celtics, even though it's only the first round. So just go away.
I want to start off by saying I got my defensive player of the year prediction correct. Marcus Smart did win. Mm. So let's go. Young game changer. I'm really excited about that. I finally respect the voters for finally voting for a guard and understanding the modern defensive assignment is very guard heavy. Like Marcus Smart is guarding Steph Curry, Trae Young, Luka Doncic. he's guarding the best players. And the hardest assignments, like these guys running off screens, they have like all these different sets they're running for these guards, just running. And then he's also guarding some big men in the post sometimes. So I just love it. He's been great for our team. And finally, somebody's respected and kind of given him his props. He's been an unbelievable defensive player for like 4 years now, 5 years now. And so I just wanted to say that, like, I'm so happy for Marcus Smart.
Yeah, I'm happy for you too.
Yeah. And then coming to the games, I mean, just
not really.
Start with game one. Game one was just unbelievable. That is by far the best game of basketball I've seen this season. That was insanely exciting to watch. And I hate Kyrie. Like, okay, hate is a strong word. I don't like Kyrie. And kind of like how you don't want James Harden to do well, I do not want Kyrie to do well. But he was lights out in that game. He was unbelievable. Some of the shots he was hitting, he was just in that zone. Like, as a Celtics fan, I've seen him get into the zone sometimes. And I can understand how fun it is to watch when you root for him. But when you are rooting against him, he's unbelievable. He was incredible.
You said pass he had, like, where he splits in the corner, middle, and then he threw that one-hand bounce to the corner. I think it was Dragic or Bruce Brown hit that three. I think it was in the half. Like, some of the things he was doing is incredible. And we'll get into it. I mean, just – I don't think I've seen a crowd that hostile in a really long time.
Yeah. How did you feel about the game on antics? I personally – what he said post-game, I loved it. Like, he said, Celtics fans are giving it to me. I have every right to give it back. Why does he, as a sports player who's receiving it from, like, 20,000 fans, just have to take it and be like docile. I loved it. I love the fact that he gave it back. He's gonna get fined. We move on. I don't think it's
gonna be fine. I mean, he gave the finger. I think multiple times, right?
Yeah, I love that. I love him giving the finger. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Like, as I'm watching it, obviously, like, I mean, as soon as he touches the ball, it's just the boos are deafening. And
he was
sensational in that first game. I came in probably honestly one of the best performances so far in the playoffs. It was incredible. 39 points, 6 assists, 5 rebounds, 4 steals. He shot, I think, 60% from the field. Yeah, 60% from the field and 60 from 3. Made all his free throws, all 9. I mean, and they could not stop him. Like, he was giving it Smart, Brown, whoever switched on him. It did not matter. And the crowd was giving to him so much. And you could tell the crowd wanted to cheer so bad on his misses. But he just didn't miss. He just wasn't hitting. He just was not missing. And when you have a performance like that, and listen, I'll get into this. I had so much stuff to talk about the Nets. But, okay, so for anyone that didn't see our last podcast, really quickly, I predicted that this series would go 5 games. And I'll just say I didn't think the games have gone the way they've gone. In that, I thought that we would lose, but I didn't think it would be in this way because both of these games were winnable. And we'll talk about it, but what did you see as a Celtics fan?
So, I think, one, just before, like, just touch back a little bit on the Kyrie thing, I think because he was so hot, he actually made the mistake on the final play. He wanted to get that shot off so bad, and he wanted to pull up to hit that jumper, like when Al Horford just blitzed him, and then he walked right back into the double team for Al Horford, and then he gave KD the ball with like 3 seconds to go, and then he missed, and that led to the scramble that led to the game-winning layup.
I think it's just Boston's defense.
But I think Kyrie has to give up the ball earlier. Like, if you see Al Horford blitzing you from the left, you just skip it to KD standing on the right. I just think he did the Kyrie thing, right? He tried hitting the unbelievable shot. And I think because he was so good the rest of the night, that kind of affected his decision making. But
quickly, I don't know about that.
How do you? I also think KD's defense on the last play is inexcusable. If I was a Nets fan, I would be so angry. Like, you just completely ball watching in slow motion. You can actually see him looking at the clock with his head completely to the back of Jason Tatum.
And I think most Celtics fans thought Smart was going to take some off-balance fadeaway jumper on this.
Dude, I thought Jaylen Brown, for sure, 100% is shooting that ball. Terrible shot, falling away on the wing with 2 guys on him. And I think that's the growth of him not taking that shot. And then when Marcus Smart got the shot, I thought, for sure, 100 times out of 100, he takes that shot. And then he didn't. He pump faked. And then I thought after the pump fake, he's going to do some weird leaning forward floater type shot. But then he saw the Tatum cut, gave him the ball, and then Tatum, beautiful spin move. I mean, to have that composure and to just still finish it, that was so beautiful. It was amazing. It was amazing. Yeah.
It's still too soon. Really quick about the Kyrie thing is that, not about Kyrie, but just about the Nets, is that I actually think that, and I know that people are kind of saying that, I feel like people maybe have think that the Nets are playing better defense than we thought because these games are closer. But, I mean, Boston is kind of getting whatever shot they want, and the Nets are never getting open shots they need. I mean, of course, they're getting open sometimes, but Boston's just getting way more open shots. The fact that both of these games are close is honestly weird to me. I thought in the first game, the Celtics honestly played horrible. I thought that that was our game to steal. I didn't think that. And the thing is, both these games were winnable because, okay, you have game one where you had this amazing night from Kyrie, and it was back and forth the whole time. He hits that 3 over Smart with less than a minute to go, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, they're actually going to pull this out. Like, maybe we just remember this game one as the Kyrie game. And then what happens? On the very next possession, Jaylen Brown gets a perfect mismatch on Bruce Brown, just posts him up, gets a layup, right? So basically we give up a layup with less than a minute to go, which, I mean, you never see that happen in these playoff games. And then Celtics get a huge defensive stop on the next possession. They go the length of the court. They call no timeout. I don't think a single timeout was called in that last 45 seconds after that Kyrie 3. And then it's like, are they going to call a timeout? And they just run the play, and then it kind of breaks down, sort of. And then Tatum is spinning, and then all you before you even know, the ball's off the backboard and it's going in, and the Celtics win, and the game's over. And I'm like, it all happened so fast for the game being so back and forth, and just at so many points the Nets could have won that. Again, the Celtics came with great energy, and they played well. They deserve to win, but it just drives me crazy how we lose that game when I know Kyrie's great, but you're not gonna get that in him every game, and we clearly saw that in game two. We'll get to that, but I didn't think that our supporting cast wasn't amazing, but I thought Claxton gave us great minutes in that game. Drummond was a mess, but Claxton really pulled it together. Dragic's heat check in the second quarter was remarkable. Dragic also was a Celtics killer in 2020, so maybe a little PTSD there. I mean, personally, when we got Dragic, I really thought, I mean, he's 35 years old. I thought he was done. And there were regular season games where he was really inconsistent, and I didn't really know what we were getting out of him in this playoff series, but he's been remarkable. He's been amazing these two games. Are you scared of Goran Dragic when he has the ball in this series?
I think more than Goran Dragic, I think it's just the entire bench. I think the Nets bench has surprised me like so much. Obviously, everybody expected kind of the Celtics to take KD and Kyrie out of the game and then kind of let us see what the Nets bench can do. But I have to say that they honestly surprised me. Bruce Brown had 23 points last night. Nick Claxton was playing some great defense in that first half when you guys had that.
Claxton was really great in game one. Game two was. We'll get into that. But the point I'm trying to get to is the game is winnable. And
100%. I mean, that's the game you have to win. Celtics are playing below average. Kyrie is having this unbelievable game.
I thought the Celtics played really bad. I thought they did. I thought they made a ton of mistakes. I mean, the Nets
were bad.
Are clearly making.
We were bad for six quarters. Like the first game and the first two quarters of game two, we were bad. Like six quarters, we were bad. Yeah. And somehow we're up 2-0, which is why I feel really good about the series, because I'm like, if we can play that bad and still grind out wins, like that's a championship team. Like when you can win, when you're playing below average, that's what makes a championship team.
And that's what I would say about the Warriors when they were on the dynasty run. And now who knows, maybe they might go on another run for the coming years because they got their new star with Jordan Poole. But
yeah, we'll talk about that tomorrow, but they have a new Death Star lineup.
Kind of crazy. But here's the thing with the Warriors is that, I mean, especially in 2019 when Durant went out and they put the Rockets in two games, and they swept Portland, and they barely lost to Toronto in a series that's honestly pretty tough. And Klay goes down too, the whole thing. But a common thread among Golden State's run was that they could lose three quarters of the game and win the game. Because they would go on these runs a lot of the time in the third quarter where they would just make seven threes in nine possessions. And it'd be like, what just happened? And I think the Celtics, not that they can do that, but they have this ability where they're playing bad, and they're still somehow winning these games. I mean, the Nets are playing worse, I guess.
I still think there are offensive possessions that drive me crazy. Like, sometimes their offense just stalls. And when we need buckets, like, we don't have enough good half-court sets.
The Nets is worse.
Yeah, I mean, but just from, like, an offensive perspective, I think we've kind of been disappointing.
And the Nets aren't exactly a great defense. We're below average.
Yeah,
one of the worst. Which is why
it's kind of like, I still think there are things that can be done on the offensive end. But our defense has been exceptional. How do you feel about KD's game 1 and 2? I think game two he had the worst half of his career where he didn't have a single made field goal.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? Do you think it's KD to blame, or do you just think it's Celtics defense that just?
So we have talked about Durant. I think that so in game one, I mean, the game just started off the bat, and he was losing the ball like crazy. And I'm
that fourth quarter, he had like four turnovers. And I'm like what is going on?
How are you getting ripped? And it's gotten to a point. I think he has 12 turnovers for the series, averaging six a game.
It's the first time in his career he had back to back games with six turnovers.
Ridiculously high. And here's the thing: the Celtics are throwing everything at KD, and the Celtics coach Ime Udoka, as we all know, He's gone to war with Durant many times. He knows Durant very well from Olympics, past seasons, and he was the Nets assistant coach last year. Like, this guy was on our staff last year, and we just let him go. I mean, it drove me crazy when the Celtics hired him. I was like, really? Like, we're just going to let this guy go? I mean, just imagine, like, who wins the coaching battle in this matchup? Celtics or Nets?
Oh, Udoka runs circles around Steve Nash. Udoka runs circles around Steve Nash.
So Udoka knows Durant very well. They're designing a perfect blueprint. I've never seen Durant like this, where basically whoever's on him, whether it's Smart, Brown, Tatum, whoever, is basically all up on him. Like Smart is like literally like in his crotch sometimes, and they're completely under him. And they're saying, you're not going to shoot because I'm right here. I mean, there's actually been a few possessions where Durant would just shoot over. But if Durant even tries to dribble, their active hand, the hands are incredible. Like,
have you
it's just
ever
arms
seen...
everywhere. And then if he dribbles and goes past the guy who's on him, it's three defenders coming up that are helping. And it's, like, totally throwing Durant off. He almost borderline looks checked out in some of these games. And I granted, they've thrown a lot at him, and there are so many possessions. And I get so nervous at these games, and I'm screaming at my TV, like, as four people watch him try to dribble past three people. And I'm like, what are you guys doing? Like, all the things that I've been taught in basketball when I was in, like, fourth grade playing for my church, like, to cut, move off ball, share the rock, communicate, like, all those things are just out the window with this team in so many points, and it drives me crazy.
Have you ever seen KD get straight up blocked as much as he has, like on his jumper?
It's really weird. No, I haven't. I really haven't. Yeah. Another thing about the Nets is I said like one of the most isolation heavy teams of the year, and it drives me crazy. I guess it's a little less without Harden, but it's kind of the same thing we've seen in these playoffs where they're so isolation heavy, and the Celtics are the best defensive team against isolation in the league. So you can see how that's been playing out. And there's just been it's so many things that I think have gone against the Nets, but both these games are winnable, which is crazy to me. And, I mean, game one, to lose on a buzzer beater like that, first buzzer beater in Celtics history at home, which is in the playoffs, which is crazy. Like, I never would have guessed that. I mean, I'm sure that building was rocking the whole time. And I just, like I said, the game is winnable. It really is. And Boston's bench wasn't great in that game. I mean, Grant Williams hit some threes, he didn't hit any threes. Grant Williams hit some shots, and Grant Williams had some moments. He's definitely had some.
He had some big moments
in game two. But
he had 17 points and four field goals yesterday.
Our bench, I thought, completely outplayed them. Dragic was unbelievable. Claxton, I thought, was amazing. I mean, missed some free throws, and it was really bad. But for what I expected of him, was great. And Patty Mills, I want to get into, hasn't been playing much this series. Played 12 minutes in game one. Game two, I think he played 17 minutes in game two, 18 minutes in game two. And he's made most of his shots. Patty Mills has one of the most valuable skills in basketball, which I love about him. And I honestly wish we were probably playing him more, but the matchup isn't perfect because we have now with Seth Curry and Goran, who we've acquired half of the year, and now Kyrie, it's just our guards are – it's not even close to defensive matchups against you guys. Your guards are way better on defense. And I think the big thing is that with Patty Mills, he has the ability to float, and it's such a valuable skill where he cannot touch the ball for 5 minutes, get it, and shoot his three, or take one dribble pull-up and swish it. And so many guys don't have this ability where they need to touch the ball, they need to have it in rhythm. And Patty Mills, like, he just – it's – I love what he does. I really wish he was doing more this series. It's just the matchup isn't great with just how bad we are on defense when it comes to guard. Like it's really depleted. Bruce Brown's guarding 6'10" guys out there. I mean Bruce Brown's the unsung hero. And you know, Patty Mills isn't the best matchup, but I love what he can provide. Even the small minutes he can give us, I still love what he's doing out there. I already mentioned with Klax. Klax was great. And Goran Dragic. Kessler Edwards, we threw him out there. He was horrible. He didn't have him. Took it out. I mean, Kessler Edwards, a rookie. He was great all season, but he just doesn't have it in the series. And a series like this, where these games feel like game fives in the conference finals or game fives in the finals, you know, it's very small margin for error. And it just the fact that the Nets are even in these games was a surprise to me. So game one, like I said, back and forth, one of the best games I think we've ever seen in the first round. I mean, all I could think about was just how heartbreaking it was. And it truly was heart-wrenching. I honestly was debating if I even want to come on the podcast to talk about it. But, I mean, kind of had to. It's one of the biggest stories in the NBA. Game two was different. I'll tell you why game two was different. Because, okay, so the Nets get out early. And they stayed up that whole first half. They got up 17 in the second quarter. Celtics wanted a little run to cut it to 10 at the end of the second half. At the end of the first half, in the second half happened. before that, really quick before that, the first half, I thought we weren't playing bad. Our role guys were unbelievable in that game. Claxton was kind of a mess. He was very up and down, much better in the first half. But Seth Curry, amazing. Drummond, in the minutes he gave us, I thought Drummond was pretty good. He only played 23 minutes, but he was a zero, plus minus, just a zero. And we lost the game. A lot of our role guys off the bench were, I mean, it was hit or miss. Dragic was plus one, Patty Mills minus one, and Claxton was a minus 10. Probably mostly from the second half. But our role guys were playing well. And Bruce Brown went on a 7-0 run, like a 9-0 run to start the game. I'm sure you were losing your mind when he was hitting those threes and that floater. Bruce Brown has his floater is one of the most automatic shots in the league, I feel like. And our role guys were really rising the occasion. And we're up 10 at the end of the first half against the Celtics. And Kyrie and Durant weren't exactly doing anything. I mean, Durant was getting the free throw line and he was scoring. He had 20 free throws in that game. But Kyrie and Durant really weren't doing much in that first half. The second half was even worse. But up until then, we're up 10. And our role guys are now, assuming, are kind of doing things that I didn't exactly know we'd be getting out of them. And I feel like the whole story with the Nets for most of the season has been, get this guy help. Most notably KD. Like, get him help. And that this Nets team was just very weak. But it's been surprising to me. And I think that, listen, Nash hasn't been the best, but I think that some of the criticism you get, some is fair, but I think most of it is just, I mean, after every Nets game, if you just check the Instagram comments, like when they post the score, it's just people being like, fire Nash, fire Nash, fire Nash. And listen, the job he's had to do between the Kyrie vaccine thing, the Durant injury, the Harden midseason ask for a trade, the fact that we're in the playoffs is great. And the fact that we're playing a fight is great. And, you know, look, he's not the best coach, of course, but I feel like it's kind of unfair to just blame it on the coach because he's not the one playing. Like, he can't play for them. And I actually kind of enjoyed the job he's done. I really like our staff. I didn't like losing Udoku, but didn't think it'd be that bad. But I do like our staff. Like, I think Jack Vaughn, David Vanterpool, I really do. I like our staff. I think that we do a lot of things right. And I think that this series was a really big test. I really did not expect them to come out of this. And what our role guys have given us this game, given us this series, Bruce Brown, Seth, Drummond, Klax, Dragic, Patty Mills, it's been great. We know our 8-man rotation. It's Durant, Kyrie, Bruce Brown, Seth Curry, Drummond, and off the bench, Klax pretty much plays as much as Drummond. Probably will play more because I think our small ball lineup is better. Dragic and then Patty Mills. We know exactly who we are. The Ben Simmons thing is looming, but I mean, it might be too little too late if he comes back. Game 3 is obviously a must win. We're not coming back. The series is not over, but just really quickly, I kind of go on my rant. That second half of that game 2 was honestly one of the worst closeouts I have ever seen in a playoff game where you're up 10 at the end of the half. You got two all-stars in your team. Kyrie was an all-star this year, but we know the caliber player he is. No one's disputing that Kyrie's not an all-star level player. I mean, you have two guys who, in a playoff game, half-court setting, should be able to get their shot off whenever they want and should be very reliable. And your role guys are stepping up. And never, ever would I imagine that they would blow the game like they did. But the performance they had in the late third quarter, part of the early third quarter, and the fourth quarter was just, it's inexcusable. Durant shot 4 for 17 from the game. Kyrie 4 for 13. They combined for 1 for 17 in the second half. Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving made one shot on 17 attempts in a second half of a playoff game. That's crazy. And the Celtics were on that unbelievable run, and I'm sitting there losing my mind, just being like, what is happening to these guys? They're folding. They're crumbling right in front of my eyes. And, you know, it's just, it's so crazy to me that that happened because, now, again, and here's what I'll say about this. I think this loss is worse than a blowout loss. I'll tell you why. Because in a blowout loss, okay, your guys don't play well. Maybe Boston shoots 50% from three. They just have this amazing game. They're at home. Their crowd really gives them. And we just stood no chance. That's one thing. And I've seen teams get blown out in a series and win it. Like the Bucks last year to the Nets. And then game 2, Nets blew them up like 30, ran them off the court. And this loss is worse. I'll tell you why. Because Durant and Kyrie did something that I honestly just didn't think they had in them. I didn't believe that they were capable of blowing a lead like that. And Durant having that poor of a showing in back-to-back games, he's been completely thrown off his game. And through all that, I mean, we've lost these games by a combined of 8 points. And, I mean, I honestly didn't think these series would be close. I really thought that if we wanted to win, we'd have to win one. I mean, just do something. Like, give Ben more than a game if he even comes back in game four. Because if you just add Ben Simmons to the fold, I actually would just lose my mind. I don't even know what to think of it. Like, the way this series is going, how do you just throw a guy like that, Ben Simmons, to the fire? So I wasn't really putting all my chips into the Ben Simmons camp. Like, oh, when he plays his first game for us, things will be different. So I didn't want to bet on that. I just want to say, okay, we have our eight. We know who we are. Let's just play this, and we got to steal a game in Boston. Again, up in both of those games in the second half. And to blow like that, the job they did, I honestly think it's one of the worst performances I've ever seen from Kevin Durant and Kyrie. And these are like veterans. These two have been in more playoff games than anyone. Al Horford's probably a close third, or Dragic, out of anyone in this series. But the Nets have the experience. Like, they're the team of veterans. Patty Mills, too. So, I mean, I just can't. I can't believe it. I really can't. I didn't think that these games would go the way they have. And to be honest with you, it's heartbreaking. And the series isn't over, but, I mean, obviously, game three is a must-win. The Celtics are in firm control. And I think – I'm not counting out Kevin Durant and Kyrie. I'm not counting out the rest of our team because our role guys – have been better than I expected. I love what they've done. Hopefully we get Ben Simmons to get back. Hopefully we see him this series. But, I mean, to lose through those two games like that, it's hard for me to be positive and be like, oh, we'll get him next time. And I just can't believe what I've seen.
Clearly you had some things to get off your chest. This is what I think. So one, Ben Simmons, if I'm the Nets personally, I shut him down. I do not throw him into the series. Like, it's too physical, like, the way it's happening. Like, to play a first game in over, like, 13 months.
Especially in a series like this.
In a series like this, which has been so physical. Like, some of the tape, they show when KD's coming off screens or he's trying to get the ball. Been hitting him and beating him up.
I want to talk about the officiating, too.
So, really, really quickly, I don't think, if I'm the Nets, I shut down Ben. Have him play next season. Give him a full season of regular season basketball, and then have him come back in the playoffs. I didn't throw him right into the fire. I think that's unfair on him. And he already didn't have great confidence, at least when we saw him last on the 76ers. I don't think this helps his confidence. And I think the Nets need him to be a confident player to use him as they would need to use him. And then secondly, about Steve Nash, let's not act like the Nets got Steve Nash to coach. The entire point was KD and Kyrie kept saying, Sean Marks kept saying this, hey, these guys are not coachable. They're too good to be coached. They just need to play isolation basketball. And then when James Harden came, it's like, hey, these guys just do whatever they want and they're going to win games. They're going to run teams off the floor. We don't need a coach. We don't need to run half-court sets. It's going to be easy, right? So that's why Steve Nash doesn't have a system. There are no sets he runs. He just kind of stands there and waits for Kyrie and KD to do their thing. My show.
That second half was give the ball to Durant and watch. And it was not offense. It was crazy. They abandoned all things that basketball teams tell their seventh graders to do. Abandoned all of
it. Steve Nash is not there to coach. I think that's what everybody needs to realize. Like, he was not brought in to coach. He's brought in like, hey, he's a veteran. He knows how to train young guys. He's kind of going to just be like the personality coach.
He's in the locker room. Where it's like, you're not coaching. We just have you here to manage personalities, and you know.
I think that's Sean Marks.
Like, how is that a thing? How is
Sean Marks? It starts from the top. Like, Sean Marks should be like, hey, KD and Kyrie, look at every great team in history. They've had the best coach in the league. Like, if you go back all the way to the Bulls in the 90s when they were on the dynasty, that Phil Jackson, best coach in the league, best coach of all time. Then if you look at the Lakers dynasty in the early 2000s, again, Phil Jackson, best coach in the league. Again, great dynasty. And then you look at 2010, again, the back-to-back winning champ teams of the Lakers. Again, Phil Jackson. And then Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr's a great coach. He makes a lot of adjustments. He has a defensive scheme. He has an offensive scheme. And then
– Spurs with Greg Pop.
Spurs with Greg Pop. Yeah, five times with Greg Pop. It's one of the best coaches of all time. You cannot be an all-time team without an all-time coach. Like, it just doesn't happen in the NBA, no matter how good your star players are. I don't care how good they are offensively. You need a coach that in crunch time, in the playoffs, has a defensive scheme and has an offensive system. And Steve Nash is just not that guy. So I honestly think if I'm the Nets, I don't play Ben, and then I reevaluate Steve Nash in the offseason. And if there's a coach that you can bring in, like Udoka, like who has been given an opportunity before, like, honestly, you know, people, I don't know if somebody said this before, I would have Mark Jackson come and coach the Nets. That would be that. If I'm Sean Marks, I'm making those phone calls right now. And I'm just like starting the conversation. I'm not saying you fire Steve Nash for sure because his series is not over, but I'm saying you start making the preparations. And because I don't think the Nets can ever win a championship with Steve Nash as the head coach. I just don't think that happens.
Yeah, maybe it's tough. I mean, that was the aspirations for this team was, you know, championship or bust. I mean, Durant, Kyrie, just getting older, especially Durant.
I think the biggest problem in terms of like the offensive system the Nets have is that they cannot run the Kyrie KD pick and roll because Marcus Smart is guarding Kyrie Irving and Jaylen Brown or Tatum or Al Horford is guarding Kevin Durant and even Grant Williams to an extent.
The only switch is Derek.
They can just switch off.
That's the only one.
That's the only one.
Everybody else, it's Smart, Brown, Tatum, Horford, Grant Williams. That's insane.
You can't run the Kyrie KD pick and roll, and I think that's really hurting you guys.
Yeah, and really quickly on the Celtics, I gotta say, and again, I'm trying to be happy for you, but it's been so tough, man. It really has. It's all on F for you guys right now. Middleton is gonna be out for the rest of this series. I mean, I wouldn't pencil him in for Game 1 or Game 2 against the Celtics if that series ends up happening. It looks like that's going to happen if the Bucks can get out. Bucks are going to be probably in this series harder than they anticipate with the Bulls. Celtics have squeaked out 2 wins where those games could have gone either way, both of those. Again, the series isn't over, but momentum's on their side. And then you look at the Heat and the 76ers. Both those teams have been doing really well. So they'll get each other in the second round. They'll beat up on each other. One of them will eliminate the other. And the Celtics, if everything goes according to plan, they make it out and get past the Bucks. Maybe if they're missing Chris Middleton and they take care of the Nets, then they're in the Eastern Conference Finals and they have a team that has probably had, not harder matchup because this Nets matchup has not been easier, but maybe a harder second round matchup because of this Chris Middleton injury. I think the Celtics are probably the favorite right now. And they always were, but it's really lined up for them to the East.
This is all I'm going to say. I'm really, really getting excited for a parade after 16 years.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Parade?
The energy is just different this year. It just feels different.
Yeah. And part of that is the Kyrie thing.
Yeah.
Just on the whole atmosphere thing, the whole Kyrie thing. This is what I said. And I've been very clear on this. Now, if anybody doesn't know, me and Vinny, we go to school in Boston. So we catch a lot of Boston games, Red Sox, Celtics, whatever. And when I was going to the Red Sox playoff games, I was actually at the game where Velasquez hit that walk-off in the 13th inning against the Rays in the second round. And about that game, where during that game, there were F Yankees chants, multiple times.
Oh, I was at the Yankees-Red Sox.
Yeah, and that wild card game was also crazy.
Wild card game. That was unbelievable.
They weren't even playing the Yankees, and they were cheering that. And I think in a Red Sox game a few days ago, an F. Kyrie chant started in like the 8th inning or something like that. And I'm going to be honest with you. Now listen, forget if it's wrong or right. That's a bad look. If you're chanting F this team or F this player. And again, I don't really follow baseball. I couldn't care less about the Yankees. All my friends, I'm from New Jersey. All my friends care about the Yankees. I don't care about the Yankees. I really don't. But so I'm not trying to defend them. But if you're going to chant, like, F them or F that, and they're not even playing, it just means they're in your head. That's what it means. It means you constantly think about them, and any chance you get, you want to put them down. And it's like, you don't need to do that. Like, you're winning. You're up 2-0 in the series. Kyrie just played horribly. It's just a bad look as a team, as a sports city. Am I wrong?
I love it. I can see why people don't like it because like, oh yeah, they're living rent free in your head.
It is true to an extent.
It is true to an extent in a baseball game
to chant F Kyrie. Yeah. It's like, what are you doing? You look silly.
I mean, he was terrible for our team. Like, he ruined our chemistry. Like, we had championship hopes in 2019, and then he just refused to play.
And you still think about it. It still ruins your day. Look at your team.
In October, literally at the start of the season, he was like, hey, I want to come back here if you guys give me a contract. That's what he said.
He did say that first game of the season
in a sold-out TD Garden. And then the entire year, he was just bitching and complaining about the team. He had no chemistry.
Talking about leadership and actually not being a leader, all the stuff.
Yeah, and he would just complain and whine all the time. And then when he was trying to leave, he's like, oh, the Boston fans are giving up and turning on their own leadership. I'm like, what are you talking about, dude? And then the way he left, coming back last year and rubbing his shoe on the Celtics logo. Like, I mean, this guy's also been a big part of it. It's not like he's been this saint who's not done anything. And in this playoff series particularly, I think he should give it back. Like, in the game, like, give it back to the fans. Like, don't disrespect the franchise. Like, I did not appreciate him, like, rubbing his shoe on the Celtics logo. Like, that's disrespectful. Like, him flicking off fans, I couldn't care. I could care less about him flicking off fans. Don't rub your shoe on the logo. Like, that
who
kind of
cares?
Stuff. But it makes me dislike him more. Like, you have to see where the fans are coming from.
I mean, like, bro, rubbing his... Okay, first of all, alright, what about the guy throwing a bottle at him last playoff series?
That's unacceptable. Like, he should get banned from life if... I don't know if they actually did.
And that's the main reason when Kyrie goes to the bench, there's like cops around him. He doesn't go to the bench. He like kind of walks through the tunnel entrance.
Yeah, he walks.
And he's around cops, which is crazy. And then in game two, there was a time where he checked out early in the second half, and one of our coaches pointed to his watch, and I was like, "What's going on here?" And then Kyrie goes to the locker room, and I was like,
"It's for Ramadan. He's to bring his fast."
Locker room. And then he comes out eating a banana, and he has like food with him. I'm like, "Oh my gosh, the sun just set. It's Ramadan. He can fast."
Yeah.
Which is like. It's been honestly so interesting to watch like how this has played out, but a hostile environment like that, I haven't seen that for a player in a really long time. And he shouldn't have flipped them off, whatever. I think there was a lot of back and forth with fans where he was making the crying face when they were like giving it to him and all this stuff.
I love it. He lives rent free in our head. Like, I should definitely think about Kyrie when I shouldn't. But that's because he was terrible for us. He was so bad. Like, yes, he had some good games, but he just destroyed our championship hopes in 2019. I will never forgive him for that.
I like that the crowd is up. I love it, but just the hearing F. Kyrie chants every other quarter is like a little OD, I think. It's just like there's kids there. Like, I don't think the NBA loves this. I mean, they haven't really done anything. And I want to get into the officiating in a second. But
oh my god,
this series. When you talk about the series, if you think about a series like this, particularly with the Nets Celtics, it's been a very physical series. But every quarter, these teams end up in the bonus. And in the first quarter of game one, 18 free throws, which was like a record, or like the most.
Both teams are in bonus with like 6 minutes to go.
Yeah. And when you have a series like that where it's super physical, I mean, they're hitting Durant with a 2x4 every play, and Kyrie, like, they're getting up in these guys. Yet, I feel like they're still calling these ticky-tack fouls. And again, the teams haven't been totally disciplined. But here's my thing with the referees. I know they have a really tough job. But it's just inconsistent. It just is. And I think that there was one point where Bruce Brown got called for a foul, I think early in the fourth or late in the third. And I'm not the best at reading lips, but I read him his lips there, and he said one time. And it was pretty clear that he said that. And he probably said, like, you haven't been calling that all game. I've been doing it all this time. And now you call it this one time. He probably said something like that. Like, not one time have you called that. And it's just inconsistent the way they've been calling this, where guys can be so physical. And maybe you get hit on the hands going up. And then, you know, if you reach around someone's back or if it's a slight touch on the wrist, it's a foul. Again, a lot of these should be called fouls. But I'm of the opinion where in the playoffs – I feel like the refs should swallow the whistle a little bit because these refs should not want to decide games. No one's there to watch games. They want to watch the players to work their way out. Of course, they got to call refs, but my favorite games to watch are when I forget the refs are there, when they're not involved at all, and it's just it's a team battle. And the free throws are off the charts in these games. Every quarter, they're in the bonus. Am I wrong?
I hate it. I just think it's been
– It's inconsistent.
So, like, it's so inconsistent. This is what I think. every game in the first quarter, the refs set the tone. If they're letting the contact and the physicality go, you have to let it go through. Like, you can't let Jaylen Brown, Tatum, and Horford hit Kevin Durant as he's coming off screens and he's coming off his motion, and then call the weakest of touches on rebounds. Like, you can't call over the back falls. Like, that's just not how this works. Like, and I just don't like how, I mean, I have so many gripes with the NBA's replay system. There's so many small things that they get wrong with the replay system they can just fix. And then they go and spend these 10 minutes reviewing these calls that are so obvious for no damn reason.
Every time, like, they go to the review, I sit there and think, I'm going to waste 2 minutes of my life. I'll never get these 2 minutes back, or 5 minutes, it feels like, just waiting for them to watch if, like, a ball goes off someone's fingertip. The NBA did not always do this. And guess what? We were fine. You didn't have to go to review every 2 seconds. The challenge is cool. I'm with the challenge. I like the challenge. Challenge is fine. But it disrupts, like, the flow of the gameplay is so bad. And it's just like, we just don't need it. We really don't. I don't think they're going to take it away. I really want them to, but it's to ensure the right call is made. But listen, you just have to let it, you can't shut play like that. You just can't. It's really tough. It's hard to watch sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, their officiating has been so frustrating. Like, let them play basketball. So it's a playoff.
Especially in this space.
Like, yeah, I want to see Tatum go against Durant. Like, let them, like, don't keep calling these fouls. Like, yeah, I know KD had, like, 20 free throws yesterday, and, like, yeah, some of them were fouls.
And he probably should have ended up with he probably should have ended up with a similar number to that, but it's just the way it's officiated, it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, they can be physical on some plays and literally, like, almost pretty much push Durant off his spot. And then other plays, if a guy goes up and he gets touched on his pinky, it's free throws.
Wait, you can see the players reacting confused. It's like 2 minutes ago,
But
I get it from the player's perspective. Like, 2 possessions ago, you do something and it's not called a foul, and you've been doing it the entire series.
The
next time, they call the foul. Like, and then you just hear them complaining and complaining, and then sometimes they review
now,
it.
Now, in, like, sports, they complain. Like, in baseball, a guy strikes out on a pitch he thought was a ball and he was looking. They'll complain, whatever. In football, they give us the rest sometimes. But it is so bad in the NBA. I think it's worse than any sport, at least in America, that where it's just it's like almost every play is guys looking at the ref like okay, and I'm not trying to pick up someone, but Tice has been embarrassing. It's embarrassing. Every play he runs over the refs with his hands like up in his face, like, what did I do? What happened? And then he needs like a 10-minute explanation about why he did was a foul. And Tice has been so undisciplined this whole series. I think most of his fouls, probably all, are fouls. And so many of these guys just run and complain. And it's like, the refs will tee up anything, but guys just complain and show off refs all the time. Like, it's so inconsistent. It's really bad. And it's probably my least favorite thing about the NBA. It is.
Yeah. They need to fix the officiating.
It's
like, long
term,
it's
so inconsistent.
It's so bad.
It's really bad.
I think fans, players, GMs, everybody's been complaining for years and they've not done anything. I think they tried earlier this year to kind of fix it with the James Harden rule. But just in general, the consistency of the referees has been abysmal.
Yeah,
it's been terrible.
When I see grown men throw their bodies after being hit, I just, like, I literally just look, I, like, shake my head and I think to myself, like, how did we end up here? Where people are doing these, making these quote-unquote non-basketball motions. And it's just normal. People look up and it's like nothing happens. Like, it's embarrassing. I mean, it never happens. Like when I'm playing, like, a high school game, where I used to play a high school game, when everyone's playing basketball, no one does these type of things to, like, get foul calls in a rec league or a varsity league or a D1 program or whatever. Like, people just don't have these like, thoughts. And in the NBA, unfortunately, I still don't think it's fizzled out. And they still do it sometimes. And like I said, they call technicals for any little thing, just the smallest talking trash. But, you know, the refs get shown off all the time, and guys always complain, but you never see a technical all the time. So, just be consistent whatever you're doing. I already hate how it's called, but you have to be consistent. I know it's a hard job, but you got to fix that because it really hurts the product.
Yeah. They need to fix it. They need to fix it. Yeah.
I mean, what a series has been. I sure didn't expect this. I thought, what'd you have, Celtics in 6?
I had Celtics in 7.
Did the Celtics in 7, so you know they're close enough. You know, I had Celtics in 5. But we'll see what happens. Hopefully the Nets can fight. Hopefully the Nets can just
I hope you're right, man. I hope you're right. I want you to be right.
But yeah, I know you do. But hasn't been going the Nets' way. We'll get to the West. We'll be back here tomorrow for another podcast. We'll be covering the West series, first rounds, a lot of stuff going on in the West. A lot of really important stuff, like the Warriors' rise right now, the run they're on, Devin Booker's injury, what that means to the Suns, and all sorts of things. This Mavericks-Jazz series, which is really interesting.
The Minnesota series.
And this Minnesota game is on right now. Probably going to watch it. Probably going to watch the rest of this after this. So that's all I got right now.
Yeah, that's all I have. I'm super excited for the West tomorrow. Bunch of interesting stuff happening over there. Like, I think some good series are shaping up. So excited to talk about them after these Game 3s tonight.
We'll see you guys tomorrow. Thanks, everyone, for watching NBA Therapy. And we'll see you next time. Thanks. Bye.